This past week, we sat down with George Ciccariello Meyer, a member of the Oakland Assembly that's been organizing around the Oscar Grant murder, and more generally the issue of police brutality. He shared some thoughts on the verdict, the action in the streets that happened that same night, as well as the state of the Oakland Assembly in itself and in relation to other groups, and some projects that are currently being worked on within that space. The last show that we did was July 4th, so it was before the verdict came out. So, I mean, I guess the first question would be sort of like, what was your impression of the verdict and the aftermath of the verdict?
I think a lot of us in the organizing around Oscar Grant were expecting this verdict from the very beginning, expecting a manslaughter verdict because we knew that would be an easy conviction, but also specifically expecting an involuntary manslaughter verdict because I at least was figuring, you know, if you put yourself in this jury's shoes, once we realized who the jury was composed of, this is a jury that was pro-cop to begin with. Half the people had friends or family members who were police officers. And so put yourself in their shoes and picture them looking at someone who they think of as an honest and upstanding, you know, police officer, and picturing giving them a voluntary manslaughter verdict or a second-degree murder verdict, which would see them behind bars for possibly many years, even on the voluntary manslaughter verdict. So I think we were all expecting this involuntary verdict, and we were hoping and expecting that people would realize that this kind of verdict is a joke and a slap in the face and kind of an insult to Oscar Grant, but also to all those who have been witnessing and suffering at the hands of police violence for all these years.
So after the verdict was announced, people went out in the streets. There was sort of the big speak out thing and, you know, then the what people are talking about as looting or the riot or whatever. So your thoughts on that?
Sure. We in the Oakland Assembly organized the speak out at 14th and Broadway. And this was a community organization. It's a directly democratic assembly style organization. And so from the beginning, it's been an organization that hasn't been dominated by, you know, sort of conservative nonprofits. It hasn't been dominated by people who want to come over and take things over because it's, you know, because we work democratically. So we essentially decided to hold a speak out in the intersection at 14th and Broadway. And we also decided, which I think was very important, we decided that it was not our job to tell people how to express their rage and how to express their, you know, their anger or their, you know, frustration or, you know, this was before the verdict. So, you know, how to, in the case of a murder conviction, how to express their happiness. We weren't going to tell people how they needed to do that. And we decided that at 8 p.m. our event would be over. And it was planned to start at 6. Now, on the day, of course, the verdict came out earlier, and before 5 o'clock, there were already a couple hundred people gathered at 14th and Broadway, and we had said that we weren't going to start until 6. So we had to sort of, move things along and get them going. But still, at 8 o'clock, the speak out, the official speak out, essentially, we packed it up and decided that our official duties were over. And what people, you know, in the assembly did after that, you know, it was really up to them. Some people went home. Some people kept an eye on things. Some people, as individuals, tried to defuse potentially dangerous situations and prevent police incursions. But that was really what happened afterward. And to speak on a personal level, you know, I was glad to see people stand up and do things, you know, and people like to say that looting is a sort of mindless act. But I frankly don't see the problem with people who are not making enough money to buy expensive shoes. I don't see any problem with them taking those shoes back, especially when those shoes are made for, you know, a dollar a day by brown people somewhere else in this world.
You mentioned conservative NGOs, and one of the things that we were talking about in the last show, sort of based on your article, was the tensions that had sort of arisen between some of the grassroots organizers in the Oakland Assembly and other people, and the NGOs, some of the nonprofits that seem to be working with pretty closely with the city government and the police. So I don't know if you wanted to talk a little bit about the tensions, what form those tensions took, like in the lead up to the verdict, and then what they're sort of looking like now after all that stuff went down.
Sure. And to do that, I would just take it back a year. Essentially, after Oscar Grant was killed, and if we're talking about, you remember, we're talking about the early rebellions in January of 2009, the 7th, the 14th, and the 30th. What we had at that point, at least on the 7th and the 14th, was an organization called CAPE, which was heavily composed of conservative nonprofits. I say conservative. These are actually so-called radical nonprofits, you know, groups like Youth Uprising, the Ella Baker Center, these sort of organizations that actually have their foundation in and have their origins in radical groups of the 90s, which took a nonprofit turn. What we had in January of 2009 was a coalition called CAPE, which was a more nonprofit-oriented coalition. And that coalition collapsed in large part because of these tensions and because people were repeatedly calling out conservatives in this organization. What we had a year later in the Oakland Assembly and in other organizations organizing around Justice for Oscar Grant was a better, better constellation of forces. You know, fewer conservative people, fewer liberals, fewer nonprofits, And the divisions then occurred, you know, on more predictable lines, and ones that made the lines of power more obvious, I think, specifically when the verdict was coming down, the nonprofits, in a way, knowing that they weren't welcome in the community spaces, a lot of them moved directly into alliance. This wasn't even a subtle alliance. This was an obvious alliance. This was a direct alliance. You know, this alliance of connections by politics and by money with the city government, with Mayor Dellums. Mayor Dellums, of course, being in charge, at least nominally, of the Oakland Police Department. So we had groups like specifically the Urban Peace Movement and Youth Uprising, who were issuing some very, you know, very conservative and upsetting calls and demands and issuing certain accusations. And essentially, these two groups, Urban Peace Movement and Youth Uprising, collaborated on a PSA that was released, a video that explicitly, you know, not even subtly, explicitly equated Oscar Grant's death with the breaking of windows after his death. So essentially saying, you know, in their message was violence is not justice, that all so-called violence is the same. We, of course, know that not all violence is the same. The violence of the police and the violence of the state is what creates a situation in which young people often feel that they can only respond by smashing things or only respond by killing their own people. This isn't to justify necessarily the way people respond, but these, you know, from the very jump, these things are not the same thing. But what we had in the positive side of this is that we had a very clear relationship of power between these nonprofits and the state. And I hope that that relationship just gets more and more clear, because it'll make those of us, doing community organizing, realize that these allies, these so-called allies, are not really allies at all in the nonprofits, and that we need to be very, very careful, because while there may be good people as individuals working for nonprofits, everybody needs a job, that once those people start to confuse that job with their politics, then things really start to get dangerous.
I think the formulation that you have of the sort of clear lines of power between the Oakland Assembly, or sort of grassroots, more like grassroots organizing, and the NGOs and the nonprofits that line up with the state is really interesting. And you sort of mentioned before that the Oakland Assembly was in some ways inspired by the politics of the, you know, Oaxaca Assembly. And so I wonder if you could talk about maybe a little bit about the formation of the Oakland Assembly and sort of some of those, how those ideas inspired the form that the Oakland Assembly took.
Well, I'd say it was around the middle of 2009 when there was a bit of a lull with respect to the question of Oscar Grant. You know, Messerly had been arrested, had been bailed, and then people were essentially waiting for what they knew would be a long and drawn out trial process. And in the process of brainstorming, a number of organizations came up with the idea of putting forward an assembly structure, because part of what we'd seen was the problem of nonprofits, but another part of what we'd seen was the fact that previous coalitions had been trying to make decisions, you know, with steering committees or behind closed doors, and we thought there would be something beneficial about bringing a directly democratic structure to this struggle in particular, and specifically because we felt as though a lot of the more radical sentiments surging up from below were being shut down once they reached, you know, these sort of undemocratic structures. And we realized that, you know, we weren't in the same situation as Oaxaca. This wasn't a long-term organized movement where the bases had already been built for this kind of radical coalition that would essentially take power in the streets of Oakland. This was not going to happen. But what we saw is as something that could contribute to the struggle, even if only for a year or two.
One of the big things that the police and the city government were talking about, and also the some of the nonprofits, before the verdict came out, and I guess after as well, was the idea of like outside agitators coming in from outside of Oakland. And a lot of times the outside agitators were figured as white anarchists. Mm-hmm. And obviously that's not a useful way of thinking about it, particularly when the police are being brought in from all over the place and getting centralized in downtown Oakland. But I wonder if you could talk a little bit about the space of the Oakland Assembly and sort of what communities it's drawing on, and think about like why those communities in particular are the ones that are sort of organizing in sort of this vein, and if there are connections between that particular community and other communities in sort of the grassroots organizing.
Sure. I mean, this outside agitator soundbite is one that's obviously disturbing, but also kind of interesting. And if you look at the history of it, it has its history in the South of the United States. It's it's used by racist, you know, governors to try to prevent people and activists from coming in from other parts of the country to resist segregation. And it's used in a similar way by those in power in Oakland. And if you track the way that it emerged on January 7th of 2009, it was actually the police that created this soundbite about the outside agitators, fed it to the press. The press started to repeat it. And then those organizers who were not on the streets January 7th, the more conservative organizers essentially started parroting this line because it fit very well with a sort of, in some ways, a really conservative nationalism that was actually quite reformist. And obviously, you know, the city has a lot to gain from using this outside agitator line. It's something which allows them to hide the fact that there is serious discontent within the community, and specifically within the poor, you know, black and brown community that is not represented in city government, despite the fact that the mayor may or may not be black. Now, the Oakland Assembly has been at least partially successful in drawing in a mix of not just ethnicities, but a mix of people, you know, what you could call directly community members who were not organizing before, were not involved in organizing, and people who have been organizing for a long time. You know, there are anarchists, there are communists, there are black nationalists, there are a whole series of groups of people that come together and work in this group precisely because I think they they like the democratic functioning of the assembly, but they also dislike the way that other groups have worked in the past, and specifically community members, because in the past, if you went to a CAPE meeting and you were a community member, there was very little you could accomplish. Everything was being done by professional activists who, if they weren't making decisions behind closed doors, which they were, even then, a community member would not necessarily know the lingo that was being used, would not know how the rules of participation, you know, whether it be, you know, twiddling your fingers or, you know, dividing into subcommittees or, you know, speaking in certain languages that only an activist community uses regardless of its color. I think we've been partially successful in bringing people into the assembly. As I said, in the comparison to the question of Oaxaca, I mean, this is a limited success because this is not a community that's been, you know, fully mobilized to participate in things like democratic assemblies. So our successes are only partial. And I think what we need is a process of almost base building and more direct participation on the community level, not necessarily in a general assembly structure, but on a sort of hood by hood, neighborhood by neighborhood, block by block level, to help, you know, develop structures which can replace police, you know, which can replace the government, and which can allow people who live there locally to actually make decisions that have an effect on their lives.
So talking about these sort of future projects or this kind of vision, I mean, obviously that stuff seems pretty far in the future. What is the Oakland Assembly like talking about doing now, sort of in the near future? Clearly, we've seen, like, with another murder happening right after the verdict was announced of another black person from Oakland at the hands of BART and Oakland police together, you know, just a few days after the verdict. We've seen that not only is the police not accountable, but that all the overtures that the city government have been making and sort of all these different organizations have been making aren't having that much effect. Mm-hmm. So what are some of the next steps in the near future?
Well, the biggest challenge, and this has been the challenge from the beginning, is to figure out how to relate the question of Oscar Grant to the question of police violence and racism and genocide more broadly. How to leap from organizing around the death of Oscar Grant in the trial, which is, you know, a timeline that's created by the state and which is in some ways out of our hands, and something that we create on our own. You know, what kind of, you know, how can we make this transition? How can we make this leap? In the aftermath of the trial and the verdict, at least, there is an energy. The Oakland Assembly met the week after the verdict came in, and there were probably between 100 and 150 people showed up to this massive assembly meeting, people just sort of like dying to get involved in this organizing. And the immediate process consisted in creating committees to do specific kinds of work. We have a committee that's dedicated to working on the question of Domenici and Peroni, the other BART officers who were on the platform and who ended up being fired, and holding them responsible, you know, and bringing them to trial, and specific tactics that could be used in doing that. We have a committee that was formed to defend those in the legal process who were swept up on the evening of the verdict. We have committees formed to do, as I said, this local outreach in communities that have not been able to come into the assembly yet, to attempt to draw especially young people of color into this organizing, whether it be through cultural activities, et cetera. We have a sort of an artistic propaganda committee that's been formed whose goal is actually to turn Oakland into a political landscape in a way that it has not yet, you know, been. And so there will be a lot of wheat pasting campaigns, art campaigns, music. And so these are the sorts of activities that are going on. There's an assembly meeting essentially every 2 weeks, usually on Thursday night, at 7 p.m. at the Continental Club, which is at Campbell and 12th in West Oakland. It's just a few blocks north and a few blocks west from the BART. And, you know, and that's usually listed. It's irregular, but it's usually every 2 weeks, and it's listed more or less on Indie Bay. You know, this is something that we really encourage people to come and plug into.